here's what I want us to do tonight. I want us to review everything that we studied since January the 1st. So put on your head and really think about what you're going to learn to this. We're going to cover every one of the questions, every one of the questions in the prophet card, every one in the preach card, and every one in the king card. And if you're not a member of this church, then let me just explain to you that we're trying to study the Old Testament. We're trying to learn it. There's an entry level called the prophet card. That's where all the easy questions are found. And then we wanted to challenge everybody, especially those who've been in the church 5 or 10 years. So we put in that second level. And then for those of individuals who said, I already know all of that, we created the king card. And to my knowledge, there's only 3 or 4 folks that ever got to the king level. And that's just a challenge to every one of you. But let me tell you, you can get to the king level on this study because there are less than 50 questions that we'll be looking at tonight. And so that's really what we want to do. We start with the death of Solomon, and that opening question on those cards is, what happened when Solomon died? Do you remember exactly what happened? I don't answer out loud, but be thinking about it. When King Solomon dies, what happened? What event happens when King Solomon dies? And the answer to that is, the kingdom was divided. Did you get the answer? Did you get that one all right? Now then, with that kingdom that was divided, we've got the next question up there, so I want you to understand what's happening here. Here's the next question that is there, and who are the first kings of the divided kingdom? Well, you've got to first identify the divided kingdom. There's a northern kingdom. What's the name of that northern kingdom? Israel. The name of the southern kingdom? Judah. All right. Now, who were the first king? Who was the first king of that northern kingdom? Jeroboam. What about the southern kingdom? Rehoboam. I hope that you know that, because if you want to be able to know the Bible, you don't have to know every king there is, but there's Jeroboam who's up there in the northern kingdom, and there's Rehoboam down there in the southern kingdom. Let's first talk about what Rehoboam did. Rehoboam's mistake at the beginning of his reign. You remember the mistake that he made? The people came to Rehoboam. They had a request to make of him, and he made a mistake. You remember what their request was? The request was, lower our taxes. Well, who did he listen to? Well, that's the answer on that card. He listened to the younger men and increased the taxes of those individuals. Well, think about Jeroboam. What mistake did he make up in that northern? Put on your thinking hat now. What mistake did Jeroboam make up in that northern kingdom? Just right when it first started. You remember what he did? He thought, if they keep going back to Jerusalem for those yearly feasts, I'm in trouble. So Jeroboam made the mistake of building those golden calves and put them in 2 places, in Dan and Bethel. And that's not on the final test, but it's like that individual who, whenever they learned that, well, the expression in the Bible, Dan and Beersheba, somebody said, I didn't know they were places. I thought they were husband and wife like Sodom and Gomorrah were. And so don't be that kind of individual who messes it up. But there's Bethel down right just almost before you get to Jerusalem. There's Dan up in the most northern part. Now here's one, and this more of a king level, but there are about 5 parts to this, and that is the characteristic of Jeroboam's false religion. Don't put the answer up yet. Characteristics of it. You remember how he set up that golden calf, and he said to the people, what? It's too hard for you to go down there. And he thought it up in his own heart. And so we put down 5 characteristics of it. And this is one of those king questions, and so, but it's one that every one of us needs to be aware of as we talk about false religion, as we talk about what's happening in America. Here's God's true religion, and everybody comes along and they put up a religion that is characterized by having a human origin, and a religion that is designed to be convenient for the people, one that is sinful, it resembles true religion, and it leads to destruction. Sometime whenever you just want to sit down and think about how those things that happened in the past are things that really, really are part of our lives, this is one of those things that you need to be thinking about. You need to recognize that what happened here is exactly what happened there is exactly what's happened in religion in America. Think about how many religions there are in America, and doctrines that they're not found in the Bible. They're just of human origin. Didn't you just love Sam Jones' theme in that gospel meeting? If the Bible was the only book I ever read, what would I believe about? I love that concept of that very approach. And if you limit yourself to the Bible, you won't have anything that is of human origin, because it's all going to be from God. And then religion that is based on convenience. A friend of mine in Birmingham years ago talked to his friend. They said, "Well, we joined a church." And he said, "Well, which one?" And they told him. He said, "Well, why didn't you come down to the Church of Christ?" He said, and the answer, we didn't want to change our life. We just wanted to join a church. That's a religion of convenience. And you can find in America a church that will let you do anything you want to do. Have you heard this week about Christian pole dancing? Did you hear about that? Now, if that's not of human origin, I have no idea. There's a Christian group of ladies, put that word Christian in quotation mark and put question marks all the way around it, that are learning to pole dance, I guess pole dance for Jesus. I don't know where they do it, but it's their exercise method. It was all over the news this week. Now, think about human origin. You know, comes up in a man's heart, or comes up in, I guess it's a man's heart, comes up in a woman's heart anyway, and thinks all of this up, and now that becomes a part of their Christianity. Folks, you and I need to get serious about this matter of religion, and we need to understand that it's sinful. It is sinful, and this story about what Jeroboam did is something that is really, really important to us. Now, when the golden calves are set up, you remember the young prophet that went up there? He's described as Jeroboam's young prophet. You remember why he died? The Lord sent him up there to cry out against those golden calves, particularly the one that was at Bethel. And he said, when you go up there, you don't eat up there, you don't drink anything there, you don't even come back the same way. What mistake did that young prophet make? Well, he listened to that older prophet. He listened to that older prophet, and you and I need to understand that just because an older prophet says, "God told me." Isn't that amazing? God told me. I remember in one of the charismatic churches, there was this reverend there that was just saying, "You need to listen to what God's going to tell you." And so this lady came out and said, the Lord told me that I ought to increase my tithe. He said, "The Lord spoke to me last night and said I ought to increase my tithe." And this Pentecostal preacher says, "Well, sister, you'd better listen to God." And so she came out the next week. The Lord spoke to me again. And I just got back my insurance check, or got back my tax check. And he told me I ought to give that tithe to the church. God told me that. God spoke that to me. And he says, "Sister, you need to listen to God." And then all of a sudden she'd gotten an inheritance and said, "God spoke to me again. Said I'll give the inheritance to me." And the preacher said, "Well, you need to listen to God." And then she came back the last time and she said, "God spoke to me last night." "Well, what did he say?" "God told me you was going to move out and give me your house." You know, it's just amazing how just because somebody says, "God told me to do this," doesn't mean that it really is that way. Folks, there is a revelation, and it is a written revelation that thoroughly supplies us unto every good work. What about those prophets that were up in that northern kingdom? The two oral prophets, and we use the word oral to distinguish them from those who are not writing prophets. And 2 weeks from today, on that Sunday night, we're going to start readings. We're going to start a study of those written prophets to that northern kingdom. So what we're going to do, just so you'll be aware of it, is in 2 weeks, we're going to just stop the study of the history part of it, and now we're going to go back and talk about the prophets that were there and what were written to these people up here in this northern kingdom. Because we've studied and focused all of our study in this part of the Bible on that northern kingdom. But the two oral prophets, if I tell you both of them start with E and E L I, would you get the other two? Elijah and Elisha. Here's one we talked about, and I don't think this is on the final test to get into heaven, but how many miracles are there recorded that Elijah did? Isn't that amazing? Harold Pack said, anytime Dan asks a question, how many, in reference to the Bible, you say 7 or 40, and you'll just about get it right every time. And you got it right that time. 7 miracles that he prayed. How long? You remember Elijah prayed that it would not rain? And it did not rain, and there was the famine because of that wicked king and queen that were on the throne up there that had to deal with Elijah. You remember how long it did not rain as a result of that prayer? Interesting, isn't it? How often that 3.5 years comes up in the Bible. How long was the personal ministry of Jesus? Well, about 3.5 years. I mean, you all the way through the Bible, you keep running through this expression, 3.5 years. When that famine came, what animals brought the food to Elijah? You know that one. That it was the ravens. I just in my mind think about, how much food could a little raven bring? You know, I mean, when I think about that and the magnitude and multitude of ravens that had to come in there and bring that food to Elijah, and Elijah had to leave that place not because the birds got tired of bringing the food, but because there was a drought. And the creek dried up, and so he had to go someplace and raise somebody from the dead. And so the next question in that, raised from the dead by Elijah. You remember the city, the location of that woman, and you remember about her family situation. The son of the widow, and Zarephath is not of any great importance. But it is mentioned in the New Testament, so the New Testament identifies it geographically. How many prophets did Elijah face down? How many prophets of Baal did Elijah face down at Mount Carmel? You remember the contest that he had there? You remember what happened to those prophets after the miracle was shown by God? You remember what happened to those prophets? Elijah killed every one of them. How many was the number? I hope you've got the number 450 in your mind, because that is the answer. And then when they had the contest, what consumed Elijah's sacrifice and the wood and the stone and the dust and the water? When Elijah prayed, what consumed all of that? Well, it was fire that came down from heaven. I don't know if I have time to tell the Stan Bronson story, but could we talk about soul? If you've never been to a soul weekend, you've really missed out on some of the really memorable things in the life of this church. And Jeff, we're having, what's the date on it this year? October the 22nd. You need to mark that date down. I'm telling you, great things happen in soul, and sometimes they're just memorable things. Stan Bronson, you remember Stan was an elder here. He was going to reenact this up at soul. And out there at Calorie Grove, Calorie Judge Grove, or whatever the name of that place. He had some men out there to engineer the most amazing thing. And that they built it with a little propane bottle of fire, or a little propane bottle, a pilot light that would come out of that propane bottle. And he had some wood there and coated the wood with wax. And everything was great. And so Stan was going to reenact this whole thing. And he had that fire that was there. Nobody could see the little propane bottle that was there. He had a place so that at the proper time, you could just step on a button and it would ignite and burn all of that up. Man, it was going to be one of the most impressive things you've ever happened. It really made an impression. Because, you know, he had that all set up and he says, bring the water and pour it on here. And they brought the water and just, you remember the buckets, how many was it, 12 barrels of waters they brought for Elijah. And I'm not sure how many we brought for Stan Bronson, but he covered that thing with water and everything was just wonderful and great, except the water put out the propane pilot light he had. And so when he stepped on it, it really proved that Stan Bronson was not God, all right? But I'm telling you, listen, you ought to go to soul. It's a really, really great time. And it's for younger and older people, it's a great time to get together. And this is not a soul commercial, but I'm telling you, there are things that happen every year that are just memorable in relationship to it. And so all of that. Let's get to this next section of question, and that is, the reason God gave why Israel was taken captive. There were two things that were involved in that. Can you think of why, what happened in that northern kingdom? It's really what happened in the southern kingdom as well. But two things that happened. One had to do with leaving and the other had to do with turning. Leaving the commandments of God and turning to idolatry. That's exactly why it happened. And the verses that, you know, that Tim, that you read tonight, those verses really just nail that thing down so tight to 2 Kings chapter 17. And by the way, That's an important chapter for you to remember. That's a pivotal chapter in all of the Bible. It's not as pivotal as Pentecost, or not as pivotal time-wise as some of the other things, but it is really a pivotal chapter in the Bible. How many kings were there in the northern kingdom? I hope you know that by now. We keep asking. Isn't it funny? We learned the numbers question, and it's not 7 or 40 this time, but it's 19. How many kings were there in the southern kingdom? 19. Now then, do you remember the names of those four righteous kings? You know, there's the first one. His name is very short, and it's almost like a Japanese word. Will that help you? Asa, all right, but Asa's the way we say that, and I don't know if you remember the night that Bobo did that for us, but Asa, and then you remember the other guy? Jehoshaphat, okay, Jehoshaphat. And then the other guy, you remember the other guy? He has a key, Hezekiah, okay. And you remember the other guy that was sighing, and I don't think Bobo was a good sigher at all, but Josiah. I don't know if that helps you remember that, but I love my way of remembering it better than your way of forgetting it. Anyway, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah were the righteous. Now, there were some other men that were righteous, but those are the ones that we need to remember. Look back up there whenever we talk about the number of kings in the southern kingdom. And, we're already down, skip down, but go back up about 4. We have not talked a lot about number of kings in the southern kingdom, 19, plus Queen Athaliah. And so since the question asks how many kings were there, there's Queen Athaliah, and she reigns probably, 6 or 7 years? Or what is it, Jen? 6 years of, she reigned 6 years, and I don't know, it's just male chauvinism that made me and David leave it out. But no, that's not why we did it. But number of kings, wanted 19 to be the common answer for both of them. But we don't want to overlook Queen Athaliah. Who was that? Who was the wicked king and queen of the northern kingdom? I hope you know this. You know, the wickedest woman to ever live and her husband, Ahab and Jezebel. And then the false god that Ahab brought into Israel. Four-letter word. I hope you understand. It's the word Baal. You remember we talked last week about the fact that God said, whenever you get into the promised land, you destroy the idols and you don't even mention their name. You know what the word Baal means? It's the word Lord. It's a Canaanite word for the word Lord. Not some idol. It was just their common word. And so whenever the Israelites were teaching their children about the Lord, if they were not careful, they'd use that local word in a bilingual kind of situation. We use that local word for Lord and would talk about serving the Lord, but they'd say, serve Baal. And the young people understood, misunderstood, and thought about the idol whose name was Baal. Well, let's think about the books of Kings and Chronicles. What's the difference in the books of 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles? Why they're there, teach pretty much the same thing. Most of 1 and 2 Chronicles is word for word, just a copy of 1 and 2 Kings. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that Kings, the book 1 and 2 Kings, tell about Israel and Judah and Chronicles tells only about Judah. Now, when I say Israel and Judah, are you thinking Israel in the north, where there were 19 ungodly kings, never was a righteous king in that northern kingdom? That's Israel. And so when you read the book of Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, it just jumps back and forth. It was just like, this is what happened, while this was happening in the north, this was happening in the south. And so they'll write southern history, then they'll jump back up and talk about what was happening in the northern kingdom. But Chronicles, 1 and 2 Chronicles, only focuses on the southern kingdom. And by the way, 1 Chronicles goes all the way back to Adam and spends 5 chapters on the begats. It really is a chronicle of the Jews. It's where their genealogy is found. Here's one of my interesting stories, and that is, killed by fire that Elijah called down from heaven. You remember how many people were killed? King Ahaziah sent out some soldiers. You remember how many folks were in that group? There was 50 plus their leader, and Elijah called down fire from heaven. And then it happened a second time. Sent out another troop of 50 to say to Elijah, the king wants to talk to you. And he said, if I'm a prophet of God, then let fire come down. And so there are 102 charred bodies there. And I love it when I think about the third man that was sent out with his company of 50. And he doesn't say, Elijah, please come down. He says, hey, well, Jenkins paraphrase, hang on just a minute. Can we talk about this? And so all of that does come back. By the way, that may have significance. Because in the book of Revelation, we read about two witnesses there, and they had the power to call down fire from heaven. One of the reasons we have trouble understanding the book of Revelation is because there are things that are in that book we're just not even aware of. And that is specifically one of the reasons that we included this question in here. Who is the prophet who took Elijah, Elijah's place? I hope you know the answer to that. That's pretty good. That's Elisha. Now, Elisha made a request of Elijah. You know, what? Give me something. Give me a double portion of your spirit. And then Elijah was taken up into heaven. How? In a chariot of fire, in a whirlwind. And so now, if you remember the answer to the other question, the number of miracles by Elijah was 7. What was the number of miracles performed by Elisha? And he asked for a double portion. So if you can add 7 and 7, you'll figure that out, all right? Answer's 14. What was the name of that leper that was killed, or pardon me, that was cured by Elisha? That's Naaman, and Naaman is an important person in the Bible. And I think it's important for us to be aware of that. How was Naaman's leprosy cured? Oh, he came to Elisha, and Elisha says, if you want to be cured of your leprosy, go dip in the river. What river? River Jordan? 7 times. And here's another illustration of human wisdom kicking in. And Elisha, who thinks about the rivers back at home are better than any rivers at all. I mean, you know, Barbados is the best place on earth to live, right? Until you grow up there. And then all of it's not that the Virgin Islands are, and there she's shaking her head no on the Virgin Islands. And, you know, and other than Alabama, I think that'd be true of every one of us in here. You know, I think that, but he said, we got a whole lot better rivers. If we're going to dip in a river, then if I'm going to dip myself in the river, but he had to do it. You remember the number of times that he had to do it was 7 times. And then there's this story, and David told this story of the time whenever the king of Syria is finding out that, King of Israel is finding out where the king of Assyria's army is ready to attack the Israelites. He sets an ambush, and the Israelites avoid the ambush. And so the northern king says, look, we've got a spy in the camp. How on earth is he finding all of this out? And finally they said, well, there's a prophet of God. His name's Elisha. If you'll get him, he's the one who's telling the kings all of your secrets and your battle plans. Now, if you was going to arrest a man, how many people would you send out? Would you send out a SWAT team? To use modern terminology, well, that's not what the king did. Would you send out a posse? You know, would you get 50 guys and deputize them all? You know what the king of Syria did? He sent his entire army to capture one man, Elisha. Surrounded the city, and when they got up the next morning, they looked out, And Elisha's servant said, look at that host of people that's here. And the Lord said, Elisha says, do not fear, for those that are with us are more than... Yeah, that's the answer, those that are with them. And I see that servant go, 1, 2, and then he looks out here. Those that are with us are more than those that are with him. Oh, yes. And then Elisha begins to pray, and he prays that God would deliver him, right? Nope. He prays, God, open the eyes of this man, that he may see what I'm able to see." And there's the army of God that was around them. Well, here's one that you've got to put it in a context. But there's a king by the name of Jehoram, who's a king of Judah, and that's important. There's somebody in his kingdom that caused him to do evil. Now, if I tell you that somebody was a woman, and if I tell you that this woman was the daughter of the most wicked king and the most wicked queen in the northern kingdom, you'd get that, right? Married the daughter of the king of Ahab, of King Ahab, and the Bible says she is the cause of Jehoram's disobeying God. Isn't that remarkable? Here is that northern kingdom. Here's Elijah and Elisha doing everything they can to cause that northern kingdom to come back to God. But just right down here, just a few miles south, is the southern kingdom. And the stupidity of that king marrying the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. How crazy can you be? Young people, if you marry a child of the devil, you're going to have trouble with your father-in-law. You think that one through, but that's true. And I'm not talking about a child of the devil. Underline that. That's the clue about who I'm talking about. But here is the man that did wrong, and look at the price that he paid, because not only did he do wrong, but he caused all of Israel to do wrong. Just because he said, "Will you marry me?" That's amazing. Well, boy, in Alabama years ago, sitting out on the swing on the front porch, said to this sweet little thing, said, "Honey, will you marry me?" And she said, "Oh, yes." And they sat and they swung. They were swinging back and forth for another 3 minutes, and he didn't say a word. And she says, "Honey, you're not saying anything." He says, "I think I've said too much already." And if you ask a child of the devil to be your to marry you, or if a child of the devil asks you to marry them, and you say yes, you've said too much already. What a great, great lesson that is for us. Who was that good king, if there is a good king in that northern kingdom, who killed Jezebel and the house of Ahab? Remember, he driveth furiously. That's Jehu. And Jehu, and this is one we've talked about more recently, so I suspect we'll do a better job of this, and that is the name of that king who ended the worship of Baal in the Bible lands. To my knowledge, Baal is not mentioned again in the southern kingdom. I haven't been able to fully check that. I just haven't done it. I probably should have before I ever even said this right now. But for sure, it stopped it in the northern kingdom, and that's Jehu. What a great man he was, and if you talk about the individuals that are good individuals. Now, here's a story we have not even told, and perhaps ought to take just a moment to tell it, and that is the king of Judah who was struck with leprosy for burning incense in the temple. There was a king in that southern kingdom who thought that because he was king, he was important enough that he had a right to go and to burn incense to God. And we put this question in at this time, even though we're not talking about the southern kingdom specifically, because chronologically this is where this fits. Now, here's a king. If anybody has a right to push their weight around and say, "I'm a king, and therefore whatever I say goes." If there's anybody that has that right, it's the king. He's the seed of David. He's a descendant of David. If anybody in the Bible has that kind of right, and so he goes down to the temple and he's ready to offer sacrifices to burn incense. And the priest there says, "You cannot do this." And when he stretches out his hand, he becomes covered with leprosy. He was a leper all the days of his life. That's an interesting story. It's not one we've told. We'll probably come back to it, but it's in this part of the study because chronologically that fits in it. We're going to come back after we study the writings to the northern kingdom. We're going to come back and study the last few years of that southern kingdom and spend time looking at all of that. And then we'll study the writings at the end of this year, the writings of the Old Testament that are written to that southern kingdom. What is the name of the nation that took captives the northern kingdom, Israel? The name of the nation. And this is really important. And as you think about it, think of the capital city. You ought never to think about these separately. You ought to, in your mind, file this. When God had it with that northern kingdom from the time that the northern kingdom started in 931 B.C. until the northern kingdom was destroyed, a couple of hundred years, where did they go? The name of that nation they went to was Assyria. Not Syria, which is the land immediately north of the northern kingdom that has Damascus as its capital city, but Assyria, which would be north and east of that northern kingdom in modern day Iraq. And that's over where Nineveh is found. Some of those individuals who've been in service have over there. What's the name of that northern city? Is it Tikrit or something like that? Somebody tell me the name of that city that is there. And right in the middle of that city are the ruins of Nineveh. Right up there, and they're still visible. You can Google that or go on the internet and look at the map. What is that, Google Maps or something, where you can just zoom in and look at all of this. You can find the very ruins of Nineveh. In a map from outer space, find out where that is. And that's up there. Nineveh's the capital city. And that is significant because one of the written writers of the Old Testament was told to go and preach to the city of Nineveh. I bet you know who that is. In 40 days, Nineveh will be destroyed. Guess where he's from? Jonah is from the northern kingdom. That's the reason he didn't want to go over there. He wants that northern kingdom to be destroyed. He's upset that God does not destroy that city because that's the arch enemies of that northern kingdom. And that's important. And the king of Assyria who conquered Israel and threatened Judah, and we've not mentioned this at all, but it's a name that you ought to know because it's found several times in the Bible, and that is Sennacherib. Sennacherib. And that's just a date we haven't talked about. We didn't talk about Uzziah, and we have not talked about Sennacherib, but those are two names that are really important. Finally, the date of the fall of the northern kingdom. If we say that the division of the kingdom was about 933 or 931 B.C., what date did those 10 northern tribes cease to have any association with the favor of God? 722 B.C. I believe it's important to peg some dates in your mind. I think you ought to think about the law of Moses, 1500 B.C., just as a rough date. You need to think about, the time of Abraham, 1923 B.C. And I don't know if that's of any significance to you. It's funny how that gets stuck in your head. I was in Athens Bible School in the 8th grade, and Newton Gribble taught me that. It was in 1923, and the way he remembered it was the guy who had taught him said, "That's the year I was born, in 1923. So there's a guy who was born in 1923 who knew Newton Gribble, who told me that guy was born in 1923 A.D., was the same year Abraham was called, and here's Dan Jenkins over here, Newton Gribble, and that guy, and it's all 1923. Aren't you glad you came tonight to learn that date? That's amazing, though, that I'd remember something I learned in the 8th grade in the Bible school and remember the way that I learned those things. Study the Old Testament. And now we have arrived in this Sunday night study, Soldiers of Christ. We've arrived at the point where the kingdom's been divided. There's the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And we have followed the entire history of that northern kingdom And that's what we've done tonight, is review of every bit of that. And we got down to 722 B.C., and that kingdom is no more. The verse we quoted last week, God said, I will overthrow, overthrow, overthrow. God had had it up to here with that northern kingdom. What's the lesson for us? Well, if they were God's chosen people, how much more so are we God's chosen people? If God looked on them with favor, how much more so does He look on us as His chosen people? God's blessed America almost as much as He blessed that northern kingdom, because there's been a semblance of devotion to God, and the greatness of America perhaps is to be found not in Washington, D.C., but in family altars that covered this land for so many centuries, and the absence of those has brought about the demise of America. But if God ever had it up here with Israel, His chosen people, to whom He did have a committed relationship, then and He withdrew from them, what a great lesson for us, that we need to do all that we can to be righteous people. Are you righteous tonight? You can become righteous because God will forgive you of the wrong that's in your life. You've got to believe this story. It really, really, really happened. This is not fairy tales. This is not a once upon time kind of story about the Bible. It's a reality. Everything we've talked about tonight really, really happened. There really was fire that came down out of heaven. There really was Uzziah. There really was all of this about Ahab and Jezebel and Elijah and Elisha. That really happened. So you need to believe that. You need to believe that God was doing all of that so that someday He might send Jesus. And you need to believe that Jesus came. Because you see, Jesus said, if you believe not that I am He, you'll die in your sin. John 8:24. And Jesus said, Luke chapter 13 and verse 3, except you repent, you'll perish. You've got to make up your mind to quit playing around this matter of religion and make a commitment to Him. And Jesus said, if you don't do it, you're going to perish. And then you need, because you confessed your faith in Jesus, you need to be baptized. Acts chapter 22 and verse 16 says, arise and be baptized and wash away thy sin. In a minute we're going to arise, and you'll arise to leave or you'll arise to come if you're not a child of God. And if you walk out of here tonight carrying your sins with you, how stupid can you be when God would forgive you of every wrong that you've ever, 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 ever done? Don't think that just because you're religious that you'd be all right with God. Folks all over that northern kingdom were unbelievably religious, but they were not religiously right, and therefore they were wrong. So you need to become a part of His body, of His family, of His church. Just become a child of God. Be saved, and the Lord will add you to that very family that He has on this earth called the church. And then He says to those of us who are Christians, now you keep on living the life that you started with faith. You'll be full of faith until the day you die, and I will give you the crown of life. Don't you want that? If you don't have it, why don't you get it right now by coming to the front as together we stand and sing. Will you come?